What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks, and we are recording on Tuesday, November 26th. This is episode 243. Today, we are discussing Texas Tech's victory over Oklahoma State, previewing our upcoming matchup and final game of the regular season against West Virginia. We also have some basketball to talk about as the Red Raiders went to Brooklyn and came back with a one win and one loss. So we'll get into all of that. So exciting episode for you guys. Fun stuff to talk about when Texas Tech wins. So with all that said, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go.
Well, Dustin, the Red Raiders went into Stillwater, and we had a bit of a throwback to the Cliff Kingsbury days of just a absolute shootout with no defense being played whatsoever. But the difference is we actually came out on top of a 56-48 victory. We're used to being on the other side of those during the Cliff Kingsbury era. But this time you came out on top thanks to a late turnover that kind of helped seal the deal for you. There was some unfortunate officiating that we'll get into, but ultimately the offense did what they needed to do, scoring pretty much every possession in the second half. Your defense didn't do what they needed to do, but you came out on top, and you'll take it, a 56-48 win over Oklahoma State in Stillwater, a team you haven't beaten a whole lot over the last 10 plus years. So it is nice to be on the winning side of that. But what are your thoughts on the wild shootout on Saturday?
Yeah, luckily we got a win out of that. But hand up, I take a little responsibility for this. I've been asking for this for shootout 40-50 type games.
We wanted to see that we could do it. Wanted to see if we could do it.
I will say, I know I've been asking for it, but once we were in the moment of it, you know, late third and fourth quarter, I did not feel comfortable with Kitley having to score every drive.
I did not like that feeling.
So luckily he pretty much did and did enough, and defense got a fumble in the end to score another touchdown for us. But yeah, I think the fact that we had, I think, both teams had five or six touchdowns in the second half alone. Yeah. Like, it was wild, but we were able to pull it off. I mean, really looking back on it, we shouldn't be that surprised when you have two of the worst defenses in the country, not just in the league, but we kind of got what we asked for. Yeah, this is old school, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, Big 12 type stuff of, you know, last one to score, first to 50 type wins. And luckily we pulled it off with some, you know, Taj, again, on the back of Taj Brooks mostly.
Yeah, thankful for Taj. Yeah, this game was an experience. I don't know if we're better for it. I don't know if we're worse for watching it. I said to somebody, I was like, if you view this Texas Tech football as a comedy, kind of makes the watching experience a little bit better.
Yeah.
Frustrating second quarter yet again. Like, you jumped up, you're up 14-0 and felt like, all right, you're really moving the ball well. And then, like Kitley kind of does, it just all of a sudden stalls out. You know, luckily we were able to get it going, had a nice little 2-minute drive there to score right before half. And then after that, you only didn't score on one opportunity in the second half. So it was really good. I did, you know, kind of, you know, a compliment and some shade at Zach Kitley. It was like, got to give your shout out to Zach Kitley and the offense for this performance. They put up 49 points against the worst defense in the Big 12.
Exactly.
So it's like everybody's losing their mind. Oh, nobody talk about the offense anymore, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, look who they did it against. It's not anybody impressive. It's not like we put up 49 points against the best team. It was a terrible defense. Hey, he did what he was supposed to do. So shout out to him on that. Taj was awesome. I thought some other players that we'll talk about a little bit more were good for you. The defense was just the atrocious. You let a guy who is making his first career start, carve you up. That wasn't good. You know, Ollie had, you know, a big play on you. Other than that, I thought you did a good job kind of containing him other than that one big run he had. But ultimately, it was just, you know, you get a sack, it'd be second and 20, and then they'd hit a slant for 25 yards. And it was just felt like there was no hope for this defense in the second half. Really felt like you were going to have to be the team with the ball last to win this one. And then luckily, a bad snap goes all the way into the end zone, and you're the team that falls on it. And then you kind of end up being the more fortunate side in this game. But good offensive game. I think this is what we asked for. We were like, hey, we need to see us put it on a bad defense. And I'm glad that he was able to do that. Defensively, obviously very concerning. Any other thoughts you had about the offense's performance, particularly in this one? And, you know, Kittley was in his bag. I thought there were some really gutsy calls that he made that ended up paying off. I think you look at the 4th-and-1 Taj Brooks touchdown where you kind of ran the same play you did against Iowa State. I thought that was a nice call. You had a 3rd-and-10 option call that got you a first down. And then the kind of the call that won you the game was the quarterback draw, which we hate here, but a quarterback draw on 3rd-and-10 that ended up getting you a first down and pretty much sealing the victory for you. What did you think about, you know, his calling in this game?
Yeah. Second half, he was really good.
Yeah.
He of course did the typical first half, two great scripted first drives. And then looking at the drive chart, 4 real bad drives.
One with a barren, terrible interception in there too. One with a
pick, 3 punts in there. Two of those were 3 and outs. Barron's was a 4 play interception. So the typical like second quarter 0 on the board. You know, we had to go 2-minute offense, and that kind of forced him to push it a little bit, and that was good for us. Because I think that kind of woke us up a little bit. Because but like numbers wise, I'm not gonna give out awards to like Barron and Kittley for this one when you literally were playing the worst defense and pass defense in the country. You should have done more.
Should have, yeah.
Like 404 is not enough.
Should have, yeah. Like it was highly frustrating that second quarter of like that you could not all of a sudden move the ball against this team. I was like, what are we doing?
Even keeping like second half, like some of the play calls were good. Tosh still did a lot of just put the team on his back to get the yardage type stuff. But there was even one drive, I can't remember when it was second half. Barron wasn't even throwing up good passes. The guys were covered, and Conyers and Caleb Douglas just went over and had to make an incredible catch. These were like 3 plays apart. And
Caleb Douglas down the sideline.
Both and down the right sideline.
And then Conyers Caleb for the Douglas touchdown.
Went over and mossed somebody, and then like the touchdown and Conyers. Neither of these guys were open. Like luckily they passed even sucked so bad they weren't even looking.
Yeah.
But like great,
they were like, what? They're throwing the ball at me?
Yeah. Like, I was the one to Caleb Douglas. I was like, what is he looking at?
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't be thrown. That's all Caleb Douglas there against any
competition. Yeah, he had a couple of those.
Good team. Like, that's, you know, either going the other way or knocked down very easily. But I thought some of those 4th down or late 3rd down calls were really, really good. The option stuff, the misdirection for the long touchdown run was nice. I like on those plays, like we talked about it before, like just put it in Brooks's hand, do the Brooks Conyers package. Don't even have Barron on the field to run a zone read. Like you have the better zone read guys there already. So I thought that really helped. And maybe, you know, having it be a shootout was made Kittley be in his bag a little more, like force the issue a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder if like that's what it was, because you know he I thought he was a little more aggressive with the play calling. I thought it was opened up. I thought, you know, passing game wasn't just little screens. I thought they were taking shots downfield. You know, I thought the running game was pretty complimentary of the passing game. I thought, like, I mean, it's what it should have been, but it was definitely your most consistent offensive performance of the season against a real opponent. I would say you take out, you know, obviously you would like to have the second quarter, but we're used to going 2nd and 3rd quarter or having huge dips in both halves, or just scoring on your first two drives and then doing nothing for the rest of the game. Like, so to be able to bounce back, score at the end of half, and then have that kind of second half, I mean, that's something we haven't really seen.
Yeah, I did not, especially after that first half and definitely the second quarter from both teams, did not expect that second half. That came out of nowhere for it to be a shootout.
Yeah.
And five touchdowns both ways.
Yeah, I felt it early on after like both teams went and scored on their first drive. You're like, all right, this is going to be whoever has the ball last. And that's when I was like, ugh, I just didn't have really faith. I was like, oh, we're going to mess it up somehow.
Right.
And of course, like the one time your defense got a stop and they missed the field goal is the one time you didn't go score and extend the lead. Like you gave them the ball right back and they go and tie it. So frustrating game on the defensive side of the ball. I don't really know if there's really just anything to talk about here other than it was just bad, man. You lost Quincy, you lost Quincy Ledet, and you lost DeBraylon Carroll. You know, you're just thin on the defensive line with all the injuries. So you didn't have much push there. Your cornerbacks, your safeties were just getting torched. Just pretty bad, pretty bad. Well, when you consider the team that you're playing against, of course we thought we were going to be going up against Bowman, but I thought their quarterback looked pretty decent and maybe has a future, or maybe we just made him look awesome. I don't know.
Yeah. How about that on Bowman's like fifth senior night? He gets benched for a true freshman.
And we're all like, no, because we all knew we're like, crap, they probably have a better chance of winning now.
No doubt. They did. I mean, but yeah, defense was bad. I feel like we did not want to tackle Ollie Gordon.
Yeah.
I feel like the tackling was piss poor. Like,
oh, yeah, it was really bad.
They just saw him coming. They were like, oh, shoot, I got to try and throw my arm out. And it was like, nope. Because he went 15 terrible for angles. Almost 160.
That's, yeah.
And I know bad. One of those came on one big long run, like 70-yarder, but still, like, that was pretty bad. And then, yeah, like you said, like, they would have a terrible play, like bobble the snap or whatever, and put themselves in a hole, and then we would right just back. Give it right back to them with an easy play. Wasn't even a struggle, really, after the first few drives. Like, kind of shitty. Like, Braylon Lux probably had his worst game of the season by far.
Yeah, it felt like their wide receivers had 5 yards. And then they were making, had 5 yards of open. And when we did have a guy around him, they were pass interfering or something like that. And I thought it was a really undisciplined defensive game. Yeah, there's a lot of bad penalties. There was one holding call that I thought was a bad call by the ref that extended the drive.
Even then, like I was going to say, Mo Horn didn't have a good game either.
Mm-mm.
And yeah, that was a pretty weak hold. Probably wasn't even there, but his hands were out here. Like he was about to hug the guy before he moved. Like he still put himself in a bad position to make it look bad. So yeah, that's definitely a big.
We even let Ollie throw for like a deep pass, which was like a terrible pass. And it was like the ball just like floated in the air forever. Yet the guy was able to make a diving catch on it.
I heard that when I was driving back from work and I was like, what are we doing? Brutal. Not going to have a big club red for the defensive side later.
tough performance watching from them. Like we obviously see it. We're on the anti Kittley train here, but, no excuse for that performance. It was just really bad. Obviously injuries on the line are taking their toll. You just don't have the depth, there when you're on your third and fourth string guys, there's obviously going to be a weakness, but you expect better from your coverage there to kind of, from your guys who have been healthy and been playing all season to step up and make some plays there. And there just wasn't any resistance. So tough performance. At the end of the game, there definitely was a cause for concern by the officiating. Probably one of the worst things I think I've ever seen by an officiating crew. The fourth timeout, Oklahoma State was given 4 timeouts in this game. Joey was losing his mind over on the sideline, and the refs, I don't for the life of me understand how this happens with all the technology we have, with all the stat keeping that has happened now. But Oklahoma State took a timeout with like 11 minutes in the fourth quarter. They took their second right after the 2-minute warning, and that was marked as their first timeout. And so Oklahoma State was able to extend the game and have the ball at the end because they were able to call 4 timeouts and the 2-minute warning when the game should have been won. Any thoughts on that officiating blunder coming from you, a football official?
Yeah, I don't understand how you get timeouts mixed up, because everybody's supposed to write these down, and after a few of them, you confer with everybody. All right, they have 3, they have 2, they have 1, you know. And on a college game, you have freaking 8 officials there. And then if things do go weird, you have a freaking booth that can tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I didn't go back and watch it. Something happened around the Taj helmet off deal. There was like a phantom timeout, basically. And that's where it came from. And
I thought it was a phantom timeout, but somebody went back and said, so they called the timeout there, but I think somebody from the game said that they thought that that was their first timeout that they used.
Right.
So they were saying that they had 2 remaining, and Joey was like, no, they've already used 1. They should have 1 remaining. So that was the confusion. It was did not mark down the first timeout that was given. So that's where my confusion was coming from. And I was texting you, I was like, is there a rule where when a player's helmet comes off that they stop the clock or something?
They stop it, and then they should, once they get them off, they should roll that thing. But yeah, I don't understand. And then how it's was never communicated to anybody. That's the part that kind of sucked, was like, you never got an explanation. I don't think Joey ever got an explanation of what's going on. Why do they have this? Why do they not have this? Whatever the case may be. You can't just let it fly and not announce anything to the team, to the TV, like to the stadium. Like, especially when, again, you have a Big 12 conference game at the end of the year, and this is like game on the line type timeout stuff. Like, we're trying to milk the clock. They're trying to use timeouts to not.
If we didn't get that first down on that Barron QB draw, they can stop the clock, and they have like 1.5 minutes to go down the field.
Timeout left. Or 2.
And so, yeah. So, like, yeah, it was a
that's
really.
That's where it gets me.
Yeah. It was a potentially game-altering blunder that was made. I just don't understand how they can't check that. And, like, when Joey's asking them, hey, they've used a timeout, why they can't go to the monitor or something there to make sure it's correct. Like, the TV show, and they have 2 timeouts remaining. Like, I just don't understand how the one people group that you're relying on to know that don't know it. And it was pretty bad. It was a pretty bad blunder. Luckily, you were able to get that first down, run some clock, and then, you know, force them to throw a turnover.
That wasn't the worst missed call in the Big 12 this week.
Oh,
Shador got his legs broken.
I mean, officiating, we haven't complained about it a whole lot this season, but the last few weeks there's been some bad missed calls, some bad judgment.
Especially
when you look
at the Shador roughing the passer that we got.
Yeah.
When we hit him in the hip and the ball still in his hand.
Way less.
But Kansas hits him 2 whole seconds late in the shins.
like one of the no-nos is going for the legs too. Like, I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, that one is crazy.
The inconsistencies, man. Inconsistencies are bad. So our stats from the game: Barron, 37 of 53 for a 401 yards, 400-yard game for Barron. 4 touchdown passes. He did throw 1 interception. Taj, 133 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns. He also added 65 receiving yards and a touchdown through the air. So pretty big day for Taj. Caleb Douglas led you receiving with 5 for 102 and 1 touchdown. Jalen Conyers had a nice game of 7 for 74 and a touchdown. Mason Tharp got some looks early on. 2 catches, though, for 13 yards, but he did have a touchdown.
About that one.
It came out. We threw the bottom like 4 times on the first drive. I was like, holy shit.
Even the Conyers touchdown that we joked about, I was like, oh, well, Kittley's going to forget about him now.
Yeah.
And then he didn't.
Conyers was nice. Very much involved in this game. It was very nice to see. Love that it happens with 2 games remaining and on the schedule. Defensively, as we mentioned, pretty bad from their side. So they gave up 343 in the air, 2 touchdowns to the first time starter. Ollie Gordon had 156 on the ground and 3 touchdowns. You did generate two turnovers, a fumble off a bad snap, and an interception to end the game. Both of those, the fumble recovered by J-Rod, the interception by J-Rod. So, yeah, you know, yay on those turnovers. Our prediction recap, I had a 38-27 win for the Red Raiders. Dustin had 34-24, so we were way under on the scoring, but we did get Texas Tech right. We both had Texas Tech a -3.5, so we get that correct. We both had the under here, the over, way over. So we miss on that one pretty bad. Offensively, Dustin almost there. He had 2 100-yard receivers in this game. He had Caleb Douglas over the century mark, and Coy Aiken was second on the team with 90 yards, so you missed it by just 10 yards, pretty close. I had Taj 200-yard rushing game. He had 133 yards on the ground. He almost breached the 200 mark total purpose yards. Didn't expect the 65 yards receiving and the nice touchdown snag he had. Defensively, Dustin had a take three. No, I had Bowman was going to throw two picks, but Bowman didn't play. We did, however, have one pick. So,
yeah,
I mean,
still didn't get there.
Didn't know Bowman wasn't going to play. So, so that's our prediction recap. That is a dub for the seventh time this season. So we get to open up Club Red one more time. Hopefully, maybe another next week. We'll see. But let's go to the club.
Hood hit Chester!
Somebody turn on some damn music!
All right, Club Red is officially open, and that means we get to let in an offensive and defensive VIP. Offensive side of the ball, who are you going with this week?
I mean, there's so many receivers to pick from. As always, Brooks is already in. He's waiting on everybody else to join him. I guess I'll go Caleb Douglas. I really liked him in this game. He led you in receptions with 11, 102 yards, touchdown, and like I said, made a couple really good grabs to keep some plays going. So, and he's had some really good last few weeks. So I like what Caleb's been giving you.
Yeah, big fan. He's been a really solid deep threat for you. Just, you know, make some impressive catches in traffic, and he's got the hands down and the sideline down.
And every time he makes a catch, I'm like, yes, he's here next year. Yes.
Hopefully. Probably. But yeah.
But yes.
I really hope so, because he's gotten better and better as the season's gone on. I'm going with Jalen Conyers. Been one of my favorite players to watch this season. It's been unfortunate that he hasn't gotten as many targets and receptions as that I would like for him to have, but this was a good game for him. 7 touchdowns, sick catch for the touchdown where he mossed the dude. Was a part of the package that sprung Taj loose for that 40-yard touchdown run. That was important. Just impressed with his play in this game, from blocking to receiving, having an impact on the game. I really liked
it. This should be his usual stat line.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It should never be less than 7, I think. Just I love watching the dude. I'm sad that it's only one season, but he's just so versatile at the tight end position with how big he is, but also how fast he is, how well he can catch the ball.
Yeah.
But yeah, big game for him there. Defensively, what you going with? Not a lot to do here. I'm going a funny route on mine.
Okay, great. Because I was going to make an executive decision and say J-Rod's the only one getting in at this group. So
yeah,
we'll save that decision. But yeah. J-Rod by far is the best player on the defense. Kind of the only one that showed up. Michael Dingle had a pretty good game too, little impact. But I mean, J-Rod had both of your turnovers, was flying everywhere. So J-Rod is the easy defensive end.
I'm going to, you know, if the center from Oklahoma State shows up, I'm going to let him in because of that terrible snap that went into the end zone that gave us the touchdown that basically sealed the victory. Nothing that you caused on that. He just had one of the worst snaps I've ever seen. That thing was like 5 yards over the quarterback's head. Went 25 yards back.
I'll do another one real quick, just because I'm looking at it. Dre McCray and Kelby Vaslin can get in as well on special teams. Special teams return game played great. Dre had 87 return yards off 3 returns. Won them for 45. That was huge.
Yeah, broke a big one.
And then Kelby had the onside kick return, which I don't know what Oklahoma State was doing, because
it was odd.
They had one guy on the far side. everybody else close. They kicked it there, and we had two dudes there. Like,
they were hoping that those guys wouldn't pay attention to him. And
yeah,
Kelby was right there, read it, and the kick went right to him, and he got a solid return, gave us great field position in a game where the field position really mattered. So,
those guys get in as well.
Yeah, special teams will let those guys in for those plays. Yeah, it was nice to see Dre almost break one. Feel like we haven't had – people haven't really been kicking to him, so he hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities, and he's missed a few games with injury. So, shout-out to those guys. Shout-out to the Red Raiders for getting the win. And now it's time to shift our focus to the final game of the season. The last time we'll go to the Jones this season for 11 a.m. kickoff with the West Virginia Mountaineers. Well, Saturday, the Red Raiders will have their first 11 a.m. kick of the season and last 11 a.m. kick of the season as the West Virginia Mountaineers head to town. The West Virginia Mountaineers currently sit at 6-5, 5-3 in the Big 12. You are 7-4, 5-3 in the Big 12. And Dustin, to start this off before we dive into West Virginia, there is a scenario where either one of these teams could find themselves in the Big 12 championship. Now, a lot of things would have to happen. I'm not going to go through everything that needs to happen for the Red Raiders to make it. I just want to know this. Do you actually want us to end up in the Big 12 championship, or are you good with just winning this game and moving on to the bowl?
Oh, if the craps dice get hot and we make it in, hell yeah, I'd be excited. But yeah, we need us to win and like four other games to go exactly right. So the chances are going to be slim. We'll know a lot come Friday because I think Colorado plays then. So that'll be our first hint if we have a chance anymore. So yeah, I'd be excited though.
I'd be excited, but then I'm also thinking of this through a lens of, if we accidentally somehow end up in the Big 12 tournament championship game, it's like, doesn't feel like super earned. And then maybe we just slap a Band-Aid on him, like, all right, we run it back with Kitley and DeRuiter next year. And I feel like this team needs some changes if we want to get over the hump. And then just like winning eight games against a pretty terrible schedule when you definitely should have won 9, right, 10 at the least, stumbled into the championship game because everything fell your way. Maybe if we went out and win it, that would change my thoughts on it. But for some reason, I just feel like let's just not get in and move on and make the changes necessary. I'm just scared that if we did get in, they would just be like, hey, we made the Big 12 championship game. We're running it back with Zach Kitley again. And then you're removing 30% of the offense and Taj Brooks from this team. And you have no idea what it's going to look like with Zach Kitley and no Taj Brooks to rely on. That scares me a little bit.
I mean, just because you brought it up, you're going to remove a lot with 30 with Taj. What? Another couple percentage with Conyers and another couple percentage with
Josh Kelly.
So, like, yeah. But, yeah, I'd still want it. Just something else to build on.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to hang your hat on. But like we said, it's going to be very difficult for the Red Raiders. They would need everything to go according to plan. And that starts off with beating the West Virginia Mountaineers, who we've seen time and time again when it's big games at the Jones, we've collapsed. So hopefully that's not the case this week. But a little bit about the West Virginia Mountaineers quarterback, Garrett Green, dual threat quarterback. He's thrown for 1,700 yards, 12 touchdowns, 9 picks. But he's also second on the team in rushing with 649 yards and 5 touchdowns. Not ideal for the Red Raiders. They do have a running back threat with speedy Jaheim White, 693 yards for him, 6 touchdowns, and then a big bruiser change of pace running back in CJ Donaldson, who has 621 yards and 9 touchdowns. So three guys with over 600 yards rushing. That's what they're going to try to do to you. They're going to try to run the football. So what are you looking at?
Just my predictions for later.
Oh, yeah. They're going to want to try to run the football, which makes me feel a little bit better because we've been
over sitting there and I don't like it anymore.
Yeah. Their wide receivers haven't been huge threats this season. Their leading receiver on the season is Hudson Clement, who only has 535 yards on the season. It sounds like Texas Tech from last year. Just like all rushing and then like none of your receivers really breaking through.
Sweet.
They have another, their second on the team is has 426 yards and four touchdowns. They do have a tight end who has almost 400 yards receiving and three touchdowns. So those are the kind of threats in the receiving. But this is a team that's going to want to beat you on the ground. They're going to run the ball. They're going to want to put it in Garrett Green's hands. He's going to, the play breaks down, he's going to try to run it on you. They've got a speedster and a bigger, tougher, more physical running back. So it's an offense that's going to present a lot of issues for this defense. Defensively, also, you should feel good going into this one. West Virginia's defense giving up about 30 points per game, 135 rushing yards per game, 260 passing yards per game. So those are numbers you like to see. You just played an Oklahoma State defense who gave up about the same amount of passing, and you saw what you did to that defense throwing for 400 yards. So your thoughts on facing the West Virginia Mountaineers on early kickoff on Saturday?
Yeah, we like the early kickoff for a game like this, to be honest. I mean, not a riveting matchup. Let's just wake up, have a couple beers on the way, and get this thing done and over with and have the rest of our Saturday after Thanksgiving to do. So excited for that, to be honest. I know the few fans that are going to be there, we're going to have to bring a lot of energy because students aren't going to be very packed in on their side. So, yeah, Garrett Green doesn't scare me with his arm, but they beat us last year, and he beat us with his legs last year. And I hope they've shown a lot of that, because that was one of our bigger disappointment games of last year for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Big no-show. Garrett Green went off on us. Like,
I don't think they even played. I think they played his backup last year. I remember it being that lefty. So that was like even more of a reason you should have won, is they weren't even playing Garrett because he was hurt.
But yeah, kind of, I liked how you laid it out that it looks like us from last year. And I was like, oh, well, that offense wasn't that much to deal with, to be honest. And so I know our D-line's really banged up, but if we kind of know what you're going to do like this, I think that helps. Yeah. Being able to plan and, you know, Ben Roberts gets some more action and he can help deal with that run game. And so, yeah, I really like that. They're not great on the defensive end as well. And so I do know from talking to a couple of my West Virginia friends, my buddy Ethan Blum, we're going to have our usual bet of the year. Loser pays the difference. We were texting earlier today. He just wants us to kick the shit out of them so they can fire Neil Brown.
Yeah, that is an
interesting
thing. And
I said, well, we don't usually do that, so I don't know if we can help you there.
Yeah. Yeah, don't expect that. Every game's a one-possession game for us.
Also, if we really want to play chess here, we'd make it a one- or two-possession game, let them look like they're in it, let them keep Neil Brown, and keep them, you know, 500 or worse for our longer-term benefit.
Yeah. And really piss, and really piss off your friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game. I'm. It's the last game.
It's, gonna be, it's a game.
It's a game. I really don't know. You know, I think it's probably going to be a lot of offense. I hope we figured out how to stop a running quarterback. That remains to be seen. So, you know, that like you said, I'm not really scared about the passing attack for them. It's the running attack. But then against our defense, he might light us up in this game. So I really don't know what to expect from our defense in this one. Just kind of hope the offense comes out and has a similar game to last one where you're just kind of clicking on all cylinders. Hopefully you don't have that second quarter sputter that you've been seeing for the last several weeks. Hopefully you're able to play more consistently on that. But you know, this is a game that I think is would be a coin flip. Like if it's in West Virginia, I would think West Virginia would win this one. It's luckily this one's at home, so
sure,
I feel better about it.
That.
But I also just haven't been impressed with how we've handled home games lately. So that makes me a little bit nervous. But yeah, you know, hopefully you're locked in for this one. It's Taj's last game at home, so I'm sure, you know, a lot of people are going to be, you know, rooting for him to have a big game. And so hopefully you go out there, play good on Saturday in this one, and then let us go watch, you know, the rest of the football games that we've got on the slate for rivalry weekend.
Yeah, big weekend.
I guess I don't really know if there's what else there is to talk about this game. Offenses, I feel like, are going to be the star of the show. Defenses, it's going to be, can they figure out how to get a stop? And the team who can generate the most stops is probably going to end up winning this one, I think.
I mean, we really haven't changed a lot over the year. I mean, we're probably going to have a scoreless second or third quarter, hopefully not both. If we get a turnover, there's a good chance we don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and then defense, they're so banged up that it's like, that's been every week. Like,
yeah.
All right, who's filling in at such and such? All right, how do we fill those gaps? All right, how do we create pressure? And, you know, we've kind of figured out how to create pressure. You know, it's using our linebackers because our key linemen can't do it. And so it's like, it's going to be the same week. To go back to your previous question, that would be the only reason I don't want to make Big 12 champ game is having to watch a team for another game. I mean, I was even telling people
that's not exciting to me.
A party last Saturday, we were talking about bowl games. I was like, hell no, I'm not going to no bowl game for this freaking team. I'm not spending any more money or time to go watch them than I have to. So, am I glad they have a good chance to go 8-4? Yes. But I'll be there just to celebrate our seniors and Taj, Josh Kelly, Conyers, those guys, and hope for a dub. And yeah, it's just a game.
Like it's just a game.
It's a game.
It's, I'll just, you know, ready for the kind of to move on and see what the direction's going to be on this offseason. I'm excited for an opportunity to get 8 wins, like we've said. I don't know how many times on this podcast, but it'll be our first time since 2008 to do that. So that can be a pretty big accomplishment and excited to
have 3 winning conference seasons in a row. And so that's been like a 20-plus year deal too. Yeah. So definitely like that's a big deal. You're building on some stuff here.
Building on some stuff. But, you know, when you're watching Arizona State go from like 3 wins to already competing for the Big 12 championship, kind of frustrates you. And so it's like a team that you beat and you're like, man, we're just a few plays or a few decisions away from being in their shoes. Well, and kind of,
all right, while we're on that, since we don't have much to talk about this game, I thought about this earlier today. Like, you really had to go back and look. I mean, Colorado, we probably don't win that game anyways. Baylor, we definitely don't.
If you score more, if you take advantage of the defensive like, stops at the
really
beginning
the
of the game,
you can sit here and be like, we should have won.
Yeah, I think, TCU obviously is the one that you really shot your foot.
Right. That's all I mean. Colorado, it becomes a coin flip at some point. But TCU is the only one you sit here we could have won, which that would have put us in a way better position in this game. You know, you'd be in that top 4-ish spot to have a really good chance. So.
Yeah. And it's just like a few decisions here or there, like one decision in the TCU game. You have no idea. Like you could be a lot more comfortable right now, but it is what it is. It's a big game, an opportunity to go 8-4 and, you know, secure a little bit of a better bowl game. And then who knows, you win this game and everything falls right. Maybe you find yourself in
crazy.
Arlington. That would be crazy. That's not going to be something I predict, but it is. Time for our Texas Tech West Virginia predictions, our last predictions for the regular season. So let's go ahead and do it. Dustin, what is your score prediction for Texas Tech West Virginia?
All right, last game of the year, regular game of the year. I'm going big. We're going to do a blowout. We're going to win 44-24, beat them by 20. It's never close.
Wow.
Easy dub.
I am going 45-42 Texas Tech.
Oh my God.
I don't think either defense is going to get any stops. And it's going to come down to like a last second field goal. That is kind of where I'm feeling this game. And it's going to be high scoring. These teams are not good defenses. And they have a pretty good rushing attack. We've seen running quarterbacks, what they've been able to do to you. So that all scares me, but currently, Texas Tech is a 3.5-point favorite, so that has Dustin on the Texas Tech side. I am on the West Virginia side by 0.5, so I'm taking West Virginia to cover that. Over-under is 64.5. I am over that by a lot. Dustin is over that as well. Offensive prediction, what are you going with?
I'm going to ride Taj Brooks on senior day. I think it's only right. I think he has another 30 touch 30 plus touches game that gets him over 150 yards again.
All right.
I say touches because he got 10 receptions last game.
Yeah.
And 70 yards almost.
Yeah, he was all over the field. A lot of touches. Can't go wrong when you're giving Taj Brooks the ball that much. Going with Jalen Conner is a 2-touchdown game.
Ooh, I would love that.
It's also senior day for him, so we'll take the Taj dominating, and then we'll take a couple touchdown passes to Jalen Conner against a defense that's not very good at stopping the pass, so I feel like it's going to be a big game for someone.
Yeah.
Maybe they're – I feel like that Taj and him package is going to do some sort of trick play where it's going to wind up with him either throwing a touchdown pass or receiving. I don't know. We'll see.
They don't need to get too tricky with it. It's just a good straight up play.
Yeah. And I'm also specifying this as just 2 touchdowns because he could be a receiving and it could be a rushing and it could be a throwing.
On your speed option with Brooks out there, maybe.
Maybe. He could score in 3 different ways. He could throw a pass, he could run it in, and he could catch it. So giving him multiple options there. Defensively, I'm going on the bad side like I've done before.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say Garrett Green's going to have a 300-yard game.
Why are you going to do that?
300 yards passing and 100 rushing.
All right. So, yeah, I was looking at my notes. I already kind of came up with stuff. I looked at some stats, but I was like, you know, let's be bold on senior day last game. They average about 200 rushing yards a game. We average defensively about 147. Well, first I wrote down 150 to 160. And then you reeled off some stats, and I was like, I don't like that anymore. Mm. So I upped it, went in the middle of both averages. We're going to hold them under 175 rushing yards.
All right. So total. That can work for both of us because that can be 100 of it can be by Garrett Green.
No. Because if he has 100, the running backs are going to get 76 more.
I will say all my bad predictions, none of them have happened. So, you know, that's worked in our favor so far is when I predicted bad for defense.
Your negativity's not working.
Yeah. So we'll see what that does. But to recap our predictions, Dustin going with a 44-24 blowout, a multi-possession win for the Red Raiders would be shocking. I'm keeping it on theme with the season in a 45-42 victory for the Red Raiders, one possession game like every single win has been this season. Dustin is going with Texas Tech as a 3.5-point favorite. I am going with West Virginia at a +3.5. Over under, we are both over 64.5 points. Offensive prediction, Dustin going with Taj over 30 touches, over 150 yards, going with 2 touchdowns for Jalen Conner. Defensive prediction, I'm going the bad route. Garrett Green's going to have 300 passing and 100 rushing, while Dustin is saying we're going to hold West Virginia to under 175 yards rushing on the day. So that is it for our Texas Tech West Virginia preview and our last preview for the regular season, as now after this game we will await to see if we play in a Big 12 championship game and to find out our bowl game. And so that's what we'll talk about next week on the pod when we're talking about football. But we do have some Texas Tech basketball to discuss. So let's head over and discuss Grant McCaslin and the Red Raiders first real competition and how that went.
Somebody turn on some damn music!
All right, well, the Red Raiders went to Brooklyn on Thursday and Friday to play some real competition for the first time this season. And, well, it did not go well in the first game as St. Joseph's handed the Red Raiders their first loss of the season, falling 78-77. It was a 16-point comeback from the Red Raiders that spanned the first and second half. You were able to have an opportunity to win this one. Unfortunately, D5 came up short on a mid-range jumper as time expired and missed the shot, so the Red Raiders fell to the St. Joe's. First loss of the year, Toppin had a monster game, 22 points, 18 rebounds. I think he had 11 offensive rebounds. It was quite an impressive performance from him. D5, 18 points, 6 boards. Chance had 17 points for you. Dustin, I know you didn't get to watch all of it, but what are your thoughts on the Red Raiders starting off this little showcase with a loss and unfortunately missing the opportunity to play the Texas Longhorns?
Yeah, that part sucks. At least we handled Syracuse the next day. Yeah, we kind of called it that St. Joe's probably won't shoot this good again the rest of the year or for a while. And they didn't come the next day. But that definitely exposed what our biggest weakness is on this team, is our team defense and guarding the three. And like, once some plays get in motion, like our rotations and guarding the three-point line in those rotations is lacking severely.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it against the sub-bar competition that we saw in the Spirit Arena for the last couple weeks, you know, missing some rotations and 3 points against bad teams. So when you play decent teams, they're going to make way more shots of those. Sucks that you had to waste one of Toppin's best games of his career.
Yeah.
Definitely
dominant
best
game.
Points he ever had. D5 looked a little tired come into the game. I mean, he missed
some bunny layups. There's some point blank
that were not challenged, and he just
missed them.
Was weak with them and didn't have it. And then, man, it's a good shot at the end. He just missed it. And so, not hating on him at all. But yeah, there was some questionable officiating that we would bump guys a little bit and they'd call it, and then we wouldn't get bump calls on the other end. But yeah, tough game. You kind of just dug yourself too big a hole in the first half to climb out and try to win this game off of.
Yeah, really bad first half. Like, it was one of those, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, this is what we look like when we play real competition for the first time. The reffing was really bad. This was a pretty bad officiated game. And I think what made it really bad was it was one official. It was like the little black official. Texas Tech had 21 fouls in the game. I think he called 16 or 17 of those fouls. He called only 6 against St. Joe's on us. So that's quite a 10-plus foul discrepancy on one end to the other. Those fouls led to 25 free throw attempts for St. Joe's and only 8 for you. So a plus 17 point or a plus 17 free throw discrepancy by one official. The other officials were in favor of Texas Tech. Now they only called like 3 or 4 fouls in the game because that guy just dominated it. But it was very bizarre to watch a game like that where it's like, why is this one official doing it? My dad was at the game. He was like very questioning of the performance from him, said Grant was after him like the whole game trying to get understanding of what he was doing. It was very lopsided. You see that with like officiating crews, like where a whole crew was like, oh, it's a terror, but not just like one individual official. So something fishy there. But
consistency we want consistency on both ends, and we want consistency between the three officials.
Yeah, it was a ref show this tournament. Like, even the game against Syracuse is just not like bad fishing. It's just calling everything. Like, nobody's here to watch you guys. We're here to watch basketball. And I thought they became a bigger part of the tournament than they needed to. But back to the game part, like, started off bad in the first half. We're able to claw our way back in the second half, fell just short. So it was encouraging to see this team fight back, get back into the game, and give yourself a chance to win. Just frustrating to lose that way. And what's frustrating for me is like, I went back and looked, this is 6 straight seasons that you've lost to the first real team you've played. You're going all the way back to the year after the national championship. That year you lost to Iowa. That was the first team you played. That was a real team. The next year was Houston. Then you've got Providence. Then you've got Creighton. Yeah. Then last year you lost to, Villanova, who wasn't a good team last year. And then this year you lose to St. Joe's, who's not like that great of a team, has some good players, but just kind of concerning that every single year you play all these cupcakes. And then the first time you see real opponents, you look like a completely different team. So I don't know what the fix is to that. We've been complaining for a while about you've got to schedule better opponents. You know, we're not asking you to schedule Duke and North Carolina and stuff like that, but you got to play some better teams to start your season so you kind of get thrown into the fire a little bit faster, because all these teams are challenging themselves. Baylor's already played Arkansas, Gonzaga, like in a tournament. Kansas is playing a bunch of teams. Hell, even Arizona State's played Gonzaga. Like, Arizona's been at Wisconsin. They played Duke. Like, all these teams are challenging themselves. Houston's played Auburn. They're playing somebody else tonight. All these teams are challenging themselves, and you just play made-up university, you know, Northwestern State and stuff like that. Like, you've got to start figuring out how to schedule better, I think. Get yourself some opponents. Go on the road and play somebody like, you know, maybe not like the greatest team, but go on the road and play like a mid-tier Big Ten team or something. Just test yourself a little bit more. And like, I'd be okay with that, but it just kind of gets exhausting watching us play these cupcakes, thinking we're all great, having everybody see y'all in San Antonio, and then boom, first sign of distress and you look like a completely different team. So that's frustrating. And then our 3-point defense this tournament was terrible. Wide open threes. Like, everybody's like, of course they're going to shoot. You know, they only shoot good against us. Well, if you look at it, when over half their threes are wide open threes, of course they're going to shoot good.
They're good looks. Right.
They're great looks, because every time they're wide the fuck open. So we've got to figure out how to defend the three, because those were two teams who weren't shooting the 3-point ball very well this season. Syracuse was like shooting 25%. They had their best day shooting threes. St. Joe's had their best day shooting threes. Like, when everybody's having their best day against you, you've got to correct something. So I think those are the main things. That's the main thing you've got to correct. Offense looked pretty good. Obviously, you shot the ball really bad against St. Joe's, going 4-for-20 from three. That will correct itself. I don't think you'll have that many bad shooting games, but ultimately not the weekend I think you wanted in Brooklyn. You know, came back 1-1, struggled against Syracuse as well. I don't know your thoughts on the team kind of after this. Has it changed anything for you? Are you a little bit more skeptical now, or do you still feel just as confident?
No, I'm just as confident. I think one, it shuts up all the people like, oh, we should be ranked. Like,
yeah,
we haven't played anybody. Don't just expect to be ranked just because, win these games, you probably are ranked. And so you don't, but I kind of don't mind losing, especially a close game like this.
Yeah.
For the coaching sake of it. Like, especially with the coaching staff we have now that knows what they're doing and knows how to use things, and will definitely use that St. Joe's game and some of that Syracuse game to adjust and make some moves to what we need to do. And so I don't hate it. So I'm not going to back off my confidence just yet with these.
Yeah, I think small sample size, but, you know, last year you went into kind of similar thing. You lost to Villanova. You were able to bounce back after that. You lost to Butler in the non-conference too. And then you end up having a pretty good conference season. So I think this is definitely like learning lessons. And I think you learned a lot of valuable things. And that's what I'm going to take from this. I would have liked to see us play better. I had more confidence in this team. And so I think that's why it's a little disappointing, is I thought this team was better built to go in there. You had guys like D5 and Chance. Like, I felt like you were going in there and I didn't expect us to lose. And so I think that's what hurt a little bit more. But I'm still really confident in this team. I still have the belief in this team that by conference play, you're going to be to kind of better where you want. Now, can you figure out how to defend the threes? We'll see. If that doesn't change, then maybe my thoughts will change on how far this team can really go.
The only thing out of these games was the St. Joe's game that perked my interest was that Christian Anderson played the last,
7 minutes,
eight, 7 minutes of the game with, and no Elijah Hawkins out there. So crunch time, we were finishing off the comeback and in a one score game for a lot of that. And Christian Anderson was your point guard on the floor. Did you perk up about that as well?
Oh yeah. I think I texted you that. I think we were texting. I was like, Christian Anderson's been Like, I looked at the clock, and I think it was probably more like 8 minutes or so. Yeah. He might have come in at the under eight, and then he didn't leave the court the rest of the game, I think, until maybe, like, when we were trying to do fouls or whatever. I don't know. But, yeah, it definitely had me curious. I didn't think Hawkins had that great a game against St. Joe's. I think he was turning the ball over, and he was just doing a lot of, like, dribbling without any purpose, it felt like, a few times. And Christian Anderson kind of came in and steadied things for you. I think he's also a better shooter. He hit a pretty clutch three that we needed at the time. It definitely was intriguing to me. And I like where Christian Anderson's at. I thought he had a pretty good game against Syracuse too. I definitely think you were told that he's going to be playing more than we expected. I definitely didn't think it was going to be that soon, but it's definitely curious. And, you know, if he can be a viable player for you in big minutes of these games, like, that's going to be awesome to have potentially two different guys that, all right, here's what we need. We need shooting from Christian Anderson, or we need passing from Elijah Hawkins. You can kind of have two routes with guys you can trust that's going to be better for you in the long run. So,
yeah. And I also don't think it's a knock on Elijah. Like, don't freak out that, oh, we got a crappy point guard in the portal type deal that we were trying to start and rely on. No, it was just kind of not a great game. And Anderson gives you more length, especially on the defense. And so it's a good problem to have, I think.
Yeah, good problem to have. The other kind of development was, you know, Kerwin only played, I think, 5 minutes in the Syracuse game. It kind of looked like 2 years ago, Kerwin. Defensively, he was terrible. And he wasn't knocking down. He really wasn't really knocking down shots. So he kind of became like, all right, if you're not going to play defense, you're not going to make shots. What are you going to do? He had a little stretch in the St. Joe's game where he did make a couple shots, kept you in the game at points. But
I was saying this the other day. This was at our Arkansas Pine Bluff game. I was like, Kerwin's got to be the most frustrating player to coach at this level, because, like, we know he's by far the best shooter in the gym out of both teams that are here, but he's also the worst defender in the gym. So it's like, oh man. He's got to be knocked down and making early to be able to play and stay in games. And then, like, we saw it quite a bit last year, but definitely year one, that, you know, he gets kind of like disengaged. All right.
Yeah.
Forgets how to rebound. Like, what? Come on.
Yeah. Luckily, we didn't see a whole lot of that last year, but yeah. And you saw Kevin Overton get a lot more minutes, I think, especially in that Syracuse game. I think Overton's eventually going to overtake Kerwin and maybe get that fifth starting spot. I think, like, that's kind of how I envisioned it going into the season, was Overton playing there. Overton's got to stay out of foul trouble. I don't know if that was on him or the refs just being a really ticky-tacky with a lot of their calls. I thought he's a bigger guy who's going to play more physically. I think he presents more stuff that you can do defensively. So it'll be interesting kind of to see how long Kerwin gets the starting nod. If he keeps playing kind of like he did this weekend, I would kind of see Overton overtaking his spot there. But ultimately, like, you saw good things from everybody. I mean, D5 and Chance were both really good for you in both games. Toppin was a monster on the glass. He had his first kind of struggle shooting game against Syracuse. A lot of shots that were just, like, not going in. They were all good looks, just wouldn't drop for him, but he still was able to get 15 points for you. So I still like what you see of this team. Opportunity to learn and get better, and we'll see what they've learned from this weekend as Northern Colorado comes to town for a Friday night game, Black Friday game for the Red Raiders. And so that's what's up next for the Red Raiders. And then next week on the 4th, DePaul comes to town. I don't know if we'll record or not before that game. So I wanted to go ahead and throw that out there. But, your Big East Challenge opponent coming up, unfortunately, it's DePaul. But I think they're having a little bit better season than they expected. So maybe it's not like that terrible of an opponent. But you got to win those games now, because when you schedule shitty teams all up and down your non-con, you got to win the games against decent teams. So that'll be an important one. But that'll do it for our basketball talk for this week. So before we get out of here, as always, Dustin, what's your final shot for us?
I don't have any final shots because we went on long today. A lot of football and basketball. Just hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving and safe travels this weekend.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that at the top, but we want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to you all. My final shot will be Taj Brooks related. Don't know if you saw, but he was left off the Doak Campbell or Doak Walker or Doak Walker Award finalist list. There are three were I can't remember the three. Omarion Hampton and
Ashton Dinty
and the Iowa running back. Anyway, I just saw a lot of Tech fans getting upset about it, and obviously we're big pro Taj guys, but who are you taking out? You know, that's the question. Who are you taking out? They all have more rushing yards, more yards per attempt, and as many touchdowns or more touchdowns than Taj.
Taj isn't even going to lead the league in rushing in the Big 12.
Yeah, RJ
UCF
Harding.
Kid is, and he's got less carries and more yards.
Yep. So
I guess Taj does more for his team than
Well,
besides Ashton Dinty, but like he does more for any team in the Big 12 for sure.
Yeah. I just was looking at it and I get like, oh, it's criminal that he's not on the list. But I look at the list and I'm like, who is he going in over? And to me, like, I'm sorry. I love Taj. You know how much we love Taj on this podcast, but I just don't see the guy that he overtakes there. Maybe if he had that Washington State game, maybe you can make that argument. If he would have another 130 plus yards, a couple more scores, maybe. But I don't know. It's a loaded RB class this year. There are a lot of really good running backs. So it's no slight to Taj to not make that list. Just wanted to throw that out there and get your thoughts on that.
Yeah,
but
good point.
That will do it for us this week here at Tailgate Talks. We hope you guys have yourselves a happy Thanksgiving. Eat lots of food, eat lots of turkey, eat lots of pie, desserts, whatever it is that you love to eat on Thanksgiving. Eat a lot of it, watch a lot of football. That's what we're going to be doing. Lots of football, lots of basketball this weekend. Feast week's been pretty exciting. Maui Invitational had some crazy games last night. So lots of stuff going on this week. It's always a great week. And so we hope you guys enjoy your Thanksgivings. Enjoy your tailgates Saturday. Let's root for some Texas Tech dubs. And as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate. Peace.